Good evening and welcome to the December lecture of the Project Mawsum lecture series. We are honored to have with us Dr. Osman Boprachi. Dr. Osman is currently the Director of Research at the French National Center for Scientific Research, CNRS, Paris, and is also a visiting professor at the Sorbonne University. Previously, he has also been a visiting professor for many prominent Central Asian and South Asian art history departments, namely in the University of California, Yale University, the École du Louvre, Louvre Museum, Paris, among others. He is also the director of the French Archaeological Mission in Sri Lanka and has been involved with a series of excavations, most notably of the Godavaya shipwreck, which is possibly the oldest shipwreck found in the Indian Ocean region. He is one of the leading authorities on Indo-Greek and Greek Bactrian coinage and has written over 15 books in English and French, many of which have become references in the field. Lastly, close to the research agenda for Project Mawsum, he has written and lectured extensively about maritime trade in the Indian Ocean and about cultural exchanges between South India and Sri Lanka. So without taking more time, I would like to invite Professor Osman to deliver his lecture.
Thank you very much, Aditya, for the introduction. And also I would like to thank Mrs. Jain, the member of the Member Secretary Advisory Committee of the World Heritage Matters Ministry of Culture for inviting me to give this talk. And I thank you, all of you, eminent scholars and students and friends. And I was asked to go beyond 45 minutes, so I'll try to stick to that. So the trade does not mean exchange of commodities alone. With the trade came the evolution of philosophies, iconographies, and cultures. My attempt here is to discuss how the movements caused by these human activities amalgamated local traditions with foreign identities and created new forms of arts and beliefs. The discovery of a shipwreck near the southern coast of Sri Lanka, 3 miles from the ancient port site of Godavaya, has revolutionized our knowledge of the history of maritime trade in South Asia, particularly between India and Sri Lanka. It was found accidentally by R.P. Sunil and B.G. Preminder, two local shell divers. They informed Olivier Kessler, the German archaeologist, who was excavating the land around Godavaya at that time, about this discovery. Dr. Shiran Dharanegala, then the Director General of Archaeology, who sensed the importance of the discovery, took every possible step to save it from illicit diggings. Two local shell divers brought to the surface a stone object with three auspicious symbols, Ashtamangala. I'll come to that in a moment. A surface excavation was carried out in 2008 by the divers from the Department of Archaeology and the Central Cultural Fund, the Maritime Archaeological Unit, with the assistance of the Sri Lankan Navy to assess the archaeological potentials of the site. They raised to the surface some samples of black and red ware as well as two purified glass ingots. Invited by Dr. Senrat Disanayake, present Director General of Archaeology, we put together an international team of nautical archaeologists to undertake further research. The first step was taken in December 2010 by Deborah Carlson and Sheila Matthews in order to attain a clear picture of the overall dimensions and physical characteristics of the wreck. After securing a collaborative research grant from the National Endowment Fund for Humanities, Sheila Matthews and Ken Trethway visited Sri Lanka in December 2011 to make further inquiries to determine the plans for the next long-term campaign. Sri Lankan divers of the newly founded Maritime Archaeological Unit of the Department of Archaeology, Sri Lanka, participated in this joint venture. Encouraged by two exploratory programs, a team of 15 Sri Lankan, American, French and Turkish divers under the leadership of Deborah Carlson undertook a 5-week underwater excavation in December 2012 and January 2013 and from January to March 2014. Needless to say, we are still in the early stages of research and our analyses of the wreck so far are preliminary. At the end of this talk, we will outline how the Department of Archaeology and the Institute of Nautical Archaeology have planned further to further develop the project. The organization of East and West trade is well attested following the conquest of Egypt by the Roman Emperor Augustus in 30 BCE. The political control of Egypt by Augustus gave rise to a very profitable sea trade utilizing the Red Sea to provide passage to India to acquire luxury goods that had become fashionable within the empire. Roman ships left Egypt in July to reach the Gulf of Aden and from there, utilizing the southwest monsoon, sailed to the ports of Barigasa, Broach, or Musiris in Kerala on the west coast of India. Romans came to India mainly in search of pepper, also called later black gold. Pliny the Elder's Natural History provides information on the prices of foreign goods in the first century of our era. Long pepper is 15 denarii per pound, while that of white pepper is 7 and black 4, end of quotation. Regarding the cost of foreign commodity, Pliny complains, I quote, "In no year does India absorb less than 50 million sesterces of our empire's wealth, sending back merchandise to be sold with us at 100 times its prime cost," end of quotation. An Indian storage jar discovered in the courtyard north of the Serapis Temple at the Red Sea port site of Berenike, dated to the 1st century CE, contained 7.5 kilograms of black pepper, a vital piece of evidence demonstrating the dynamics of Roman trade with India. Indian pottery shirts in the Berenike Coptus route implies that Indians could have traveled to Alexandria along with the trade goods. As you all know, Patinam, located in the Periyar Delta, recently discovered and excavated by P.J. Cherian and his colleagues, was of the Kerala Council for Historical Research, was no doubt an emporium. The special ceramic assemblage from the Patinam excavations comprises Roman pottery, which includes amphorae, terra sigillata, the West Asian, which includes torpedo jars, shirts, and turquoise glazed pottery. According to Roberta Tomber, the broad range of Mediterranean amphora sources includes particularly South Italy and flat-bottom Gaulish French wine amphora. Another important piece of evidence for direct Roman trade with India at the close of the 1st century CE was the discovery of thousands of Roman oeri and denarii on Indian soil, the majority attributed to the Julio-Claudian period. Compared to the thousands of early imperial coins found in India, it is very interesting to note that very few of the early Roman types were discovered in Sri Lanka. Why did the Romans, who had commercial relations with India, not enter into direct trade in partnership with Sri Lanka? The Greek geographer Strabo notes that from Taprobani, ivory, tortoiseshell, and other merchandise were brought in abundance in the market of India. It may be that there was no need for Romans to go all the way to Sri Lanka as long as its products could be obtained easily and abundantly in Indian ports. It was during this period Indian exports such as black and red ware and above all statues and portable reliefs denoting Buddhist origin reached the seaports and religious centers of the island. Epigraphic and literary sources, along with archaeological evidence, point to the dynamics of trade between Sri Lanka and Andhra. The Buddhists of Sri Lanka and their co-religionists in the Krishna Valley were in close relationship, especially during the first five centuries of the Common Era. It is also well known Buddhist art in Sri Lanka, apart from rare exceptions, is deprived of bas-relief or rock-cut images depicting the life of the historical Buddha. Even the few slabs carved with such scenes found in the island were imported from Amaravati, Nagarjunakonda by traders and monks. Most statues of the Buddha in the round and portable slabs executed in the Krishna Valley, imported to Sri Lanka, were published by Senrat Parnavithana, followed by Ulrich von Schroeder and me. Among them, the panels found in 1894 in the Bodhigera in a paddy field about a mile from Anuradhapura, depicting the dream of Maya and the interpretation of Maya. In the Bodhigera, south of the Jetavanarama stupa, unearthed during the excavations conducted by the Cultural Triangle in November 1886. And so far, unpublished, fragments found during the excavations conducted by Charles Godukumbure in the Bodhigera of the Abhigiri Vihara in 1962 and 1963 are very significant in this context. Two more reliefs were found in recent past in Sri Lanka about 3 months back. The first panel was found in Tissamaharama, the ancient capital of the Runa, and the other in Kurunagala. The frieze from Tissamaharama depicts very clearly the story of Prince Nanda and Janapada Kalyani, and it is a unique piece. We see quite clearly Janapada Kalyani standing looking out of the window, gazing at her husband who follows his stepbrother, the Gautama Buddha. The second frieze depicting the 7 weeks after the Sambodhi perfect awakening that the Blessed One spent in the vicinity of the Bodhi tree, respects the Pali tradition more than the Sanskrit one. Once again, a unique piece where all the 7 weeks are assembled in one piece. However, a new era in Rome's relations with the island opens under the reign of Claudius, following the visit to the island by Annius Plocamus, a collector of Red Sea dues. It is believed that following the visit, a delegation from Sri Lanka was sent to the country of Romanukka, Rome, according to the chronicle. There is no doubt that Ptolemy's account of Taprobane, Sri Lanka, marks the highest point of Greco-Roman knowledge about the island. It was during this period, this just came up recently, one is Rathi found along with the slab depicting the 7 weeks and probably imported from Andhra Pradesh. And again, a slave, an African Negroid slave, probably from Egypt, found again in Sri Lanka. These are unique pieces again, as far as history is concerned. And again, in recent years, especially the mummy of Grotta Rossa, along with it, they found this necklace containing blue sapphires. According to Italian archaeologists and gemologists, they have worked for 2 years on that, and they came to the conclusion that blue sapphires came from Sri Lanka, and this could be dated for the second century. Nevertheless, the great abundance of Roman third bars in Sri Lanka may be a result of revival of Western powers through Himyarites and Persian middlemen, which coincides with the foundation of Constantinople as the seat of Roman Empire on one hand, and on the other hand, the gradual shift of the focus of the trade from South Indian coasts to Sri Lanka. Likewise, by the 5th century, Sri Lanka became the main center of trade in the Indian Ocean. The shifting of the starting points from the Red Sea to the Arabian Sea of the sea voyage and the evolution in the speed of ships made the journey to Sri Lanka and beyond easy. A good image regarding the trade activities during this period emerges from the account of Cosmas Indicopleustes, the Egyptian Greek of the 6th century CE. According to a description in his Christian Topography, Sri Lanka was playing an important role in transmitting merchandise between East and West, a role once played by Western India. From about the 7th century, Chinese traders along with the Arabs and South Indians developed their commercial activities with Sri Lanka. It was with the sudden burst of trade activities between China and Middle East from the 7th century onwards, Sri Lanka began to play a decisive role in the maritime trade between East and West. The main reason for this active trade relations between East and West was the unification of Arabian countries under the Islam, putting an end to the Sassanian power in 650 CE on one hand. On the other hand, the establishment of power by the Tang dynasty in China. It was at the peak of trade activities between West and East, the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara and his consort Tara as the protector of mariners became popular in India and Sri Lanka. As revealed by epigraphic and literary evidence, the earliest donors and important patrons of Buddhist establishments of South Asia were caravan merchants and wealthy seafaring traders. The spread of Buddhism from the Indian subcontinent to Southeast Asia is closely connected with the growth of trade routes by merchants, traveling monks, and teachers. Some donors of the caves, the earliest dwellings of the Buddhist monks, were Navikas, the mariners, and Ovanija, traders. An inscription containing 11 lines written in Grantha script, dated to the 7th century, chiseled on the rock surface at Thiriyaya, 29 miles north of Trincomalee, refers to companies of merchants who endowed a Mahayana Buddhist shrine dedicated to the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara and his consort Tara. This Bodhisattva is commonly mentioned in the literature as well as in the epigraphs of the island as Lokeshwara, Lokeshwaranatha or Natha. And the present document clearly names Bodhisattva as Avalokiteshvara. This caused Parinibbana to conclude that in the 7th or 8th century, the ancient monastery at Thiriyaya was inclined towards Mahayanism. The exactitude of this observation was proven in April 1983 when the Department of Archaeology undertook an excavation at the site. On April 6th, many bronze statues and reliquaries were found buried under the paving stone of a ruined meditation hall. Two bronze statues of standing Avalokiteshvara, one of the ascetic type, bearing the small effigy of Tathagata Amitabha in the headdress, and the other princely type. Two bronze statues of Avalokiteshvara seated in Raja Leelasana, and two solid cast bronze statues of Tara standing in Tribhanga, along with a beautiful statue of Adibuddha or Vajradharma with an elaborately worked Jatamakuta depicting the five Tathagatas or Dhani Buddhas, Akshobhya, Amitabha, Amoghasiddhi, Ratnasambhava and Vairochana were discovered on the same day. The solid cast bronze image of the Buddha seated in Vajrasana displaying the Bhumisparsha Mudra of the Pala style and the statue of Padmapani Avalokiteshvara seated in Lalitasana displaying the Varda Mudra were certainly imports from Northeast India, most probably from Bihar. Another important discovery was made 3 months back at Anuradhapura during the excavations, highlights the trade and religious contacts with the Middle Gangetic Valley, very particularly with Nalanda and Budgaya. It is a terracotta votive ceiling depicting the Buddha Sakyamuni seated in Vajrasana and making the gesture of Bhumisparsha Mudra. The Buddha is flanked by several small stupas. Around the halo, surrounding the head, there is an inscription reading the Pratyaya Samuttapada Gatha. The closest example is one found in Chandimavo, close to Nalanda. Although the vast majority of modern scholarship takes for granted that ancient Sri Lanka was the home of Theravada Buddhism, by the 7th century, Mahayana had gained a decisive victory over the orthodox tendencies of Theravada Buddhism. In this form of Mahayana Buddhism, the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara was worshipped either as the curer of sick or savior of mariners from shipwreck. The healing powers of Avalokiteshvara is mentioned in the Sandarbha Pundarika. It is well known that the monolithic colossal statue of Avalokiteshvara, fashioned out of crystalline limestone at Dambegoda, was erected by King Akbodhi IV in the 7th century, who, in Kanagama, the village of the blind, built hospitals for the blind and sick. The Mahayanist image erected in the sanctuaries built either at the river mouths or bays facing the sea or inland along the navigable rivers are those of Avalokiteshvara in his role as the patron of mariners who confronted the inevitable perils of distant voyages. According to Saddharma Pundarika, I quote, "If one happens to fall into the dreadful ocean, the abode of Nagas, marine monsters and demons, he has but to think of Avalokiteshvara and he shall never sink down in the king of waters." End of quotation. The reputation of Avalokiteshvara as a savior of mariners from shipwrecks gained much popularity in Indian art, especially in Buddhist cave sculptures as well as the 5th century paintings of the Western Deccan. One of the paintings at Ajanta depicts the Singhalavadana, the story in which Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, in the form of a magical white horse, rescued the prince Simhala and some of his fellow merchants who were shipwrecked and cast upon the shores of the island of Tramradipa. A group of sculptures, especially the Buddhist caves of Kaneri, Ajanta, Ellora, and Aurangabad, depicts the Ashtamaha Abheya Avalokiteshvara, the story in which the Bodhisattva comes to rescue human beings from the 8 great perils, and among these dangers, his reputation as a savior of mariners from the shipwreck is given prominent place. The most evocative sculpture of the so-called Litany of Avalokiteshvara is the one at the left-hand side of the sanctum of the cave number 7 at Aurangabad. On this panel, Avalokiteshvara with the lotus in the left hand and his right hand making Abhay Mudra is shown protecting his devotees from the following dangers: enraged animals, poisonous reptiles, wild beasts, evil spirits and demons, shipwreck, captivity and slavery, sword of the enemy, from the devouring fire. These 8 perils are explicitly described in the Saddharma Pundarika and must have been known to the artists who executed the Litany of Avalokiteshvara, not only at Aurangabad, but also many other caves in Maharashtra. The perils evoked in the Mahayana texts and depicted in stone reliefs are the ones that travelers, traders, pilgrims, and mariners encounter in their perilous land or maritime voyages. The simple evocation of his name saves them from perils. Bodhisattva Tara, born out of the tears of compassion of the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, also his consort, had the same reputation as savior goddess of mariners. The best work of art depicting Ashtamaha Abheya Tara was found in Ratnagiri in modern Orissa. Like in India, Avalokiteshvara enjoyed similar esteem in Sri Lanka when Mahayanism reached its apogee around the 8th century of the Common Era. Apart from bronze statues of Avalokiteshvara discussed earlier, and many others found everywhere in the island, 2 main types of stone images of standing Avalokiteshvara are attested in Sri Lanka. The first is the yogi or ascetic type, and the second is the princely or jewel type. The latter wears royal garments and highly complicated earrings, makara kundala, necklace, armlets and anklets. The yogi Avalokiteshvara is essentially an ascetic figure that can be distinguished by the ajina, the height of an animal, such as an antelope or tiger, tied around the waist to hold the dhoti. The high crown of his head complements a slightly elongated face. Two braids of his hair fall across the shoulders. D.K. Donian sees a parallel between this type of ascetic Avalokiteshvara and Shiva of the early Pallava style depicting in the Trimurti cave temple in Mamallapuram. If this hypothesis is correct, the stone Avalokiteshvara images cannot be dated before the 7th century because the Pallava sculpture at Mamallapuram are generally dated to the reign of Narasimha Varman of the 7th century. One has to bear in mind that these two types of Avalokiteshvara, one ascetic or yogi, the other princely or bejeweled, are found in Gupta and post-Gupta cave temples of Ajanta, Ellora and Aurangabad. Compared to the Sri Lankan type or Sinhala type as labeled by Donian, the Maharashtra type is characterized by a Krishna jina with head and pose thrown over the left shoulder. Broadly speaking, there are two major clusters of Avalokiteshvara images on the island. One is on the east coast around Trincomalee, considered the fifth largest natural hub in the world, and is referred as Gokarna in Pali and Gokarna in Sanskrit. The second cluster is situated on the southern coast around the ancient ports of Kirinda, connected with the ancient city of Chisamarama by Kirindavaya and Godavaya. Before I discuss the importance of these two areas, let us examine quickly the other sites where Avalokiteshvara images have a relationship with the ancient emporia. The well-preserved image of the Bodhisattva carved in high sunk relief at Kushtarajagala, meaning literally skin with skin disease, near the ancient seaport of Mahavalukagama is still subject of controversy. There are depictions of four, the fifth one is behind so it cannot be seen, Dhani Buddhas in the headdress. According to the Sadhanamala, Singhanatha Lokeshwara in this aspect is the curer of all diseases. Dressed in princely garments and wearing different types of necklaces, armlets and earrings, the Bodhisattva stands frontly displaying the Vitarka Mudra with the right hand and Ahvana Mudra with the left. The fact that the statue is situated about 500 meters as the crow flies from the ancient seaport of Mahavalukagama at the estuary of Polvatha Ganga may also indicate that he was established there as the protector of mariners. A dolmite statue of Yogi Avalokiteshvara was discovered in Kobegane in Kurunagala district, not far from Dadruya, which flows to the sea at the ancient seaport of Salavatotta. One broken statue of Avalokiteshvara was reported to have been found at the most important port site of Mantai. The first and the long-lived capital of Anuradhapura, connected with Mantai by the Malwa Tuaya, has brought to light many Avalokiteshvara images. The most recent finding in this context is the bronze statue of Avalokiteshvara, dressed both in ascetic attire and in princely garment, found accidentally about 2 years back by a fisherman in the Malwa Tuaya inside the old city of Anuradhapura. The most interesting characteristic of this statue is the presence of the animal over the dhoti and the presence of a frontal animal face on the right hand. One headless ascetic Avalokiteshvara image of dolmite marble was found in Jaffna Peninsula. It should be remembered that the famous port site of Jambukolapatnam, today known as Kankasanture, is situated to the east of Jaffna, where the sampling of the sacred Bodhi tree was brought by Sangamitta from Tamalapreti in India, 3rd century BCE. The image house of Mohudumahavihara, discovered under the dunes of the seashore near the town of Pottuvil, is a place of Mahayana worship, indicated by two images of Avalokiteshvara facing a standing Buddha. One Avalokiteshvara image is in the form of an ascetic, while the other bears the royal garments of a prince. This shrine has also a direct contact with the rock carvings at the Buddha Pattuna, situated near the Willoya River, which flows to the ocean a few miles south of the Mohudumahavihara complex. Here again, we see on either side of the central Buddha image, two Avalokiteshvara images standing and facing the viewer under a stone chatra. The ascetic image displays Abhaya Mudra with the right hand, Kataka Mudra with the left. Let us now discuss the two clusters of Avalokiteshvara images found in the Trincomalee area in the vicinity of Kerinda. Apart from being an important natural harbour, Trincomalee played an important role as an active seaport on account of the Mahaveli River, which flows to the sea at Gokarna. Though Gokarna became a flourishing harbour from the 11th century onwards, when the royal capital was transferred from Anuradhapura to Polonnaruwa, there is sufficient evidence to show that it was known as early as the 4th century CE to the merchants who reached the island from the east. The ancient port site of Lankapattuna is also situated at the estuary of one of the distributaries of the Mahaveli River. Breuer was correct to assume that the section of the Mahaveli Ganga between the island of Kalinga in Polonnaruwa and the sea off the coast of Trincomalee was sufficient depth at all times to be navigable by small vessels. Several images of princely and ascetic type of Avalokiteshvara found in Polonnaruwa. Some statues of Avalokiteshvara are also attested in many archaeological sites around Trincomalee, especially at Seruvela, a temple complex founded during the reign of King Devanampiyatthisa. I have already discussed the importance of ancient site of Thiriyaya near Galvaraya at the mouth of Yanoya. Apart from its rivers, lagoons and backwaters, its eastern coast seemed to have played an important role in the international trade. A broken statue of Avalokiteshvara was found in 2011 by the Department of Archaeology not far from Mulitiu Lagoon. The most significant discoveries revealing active trade activities were made at Kuchaveli, a small coastal town located northwest of Trincomalee. In 1955, while digging the foundation for the rest house, workers discovered a torso of the Buddha made of limestone imported from Mandra. While restoring an ancient building in 1984, the officers of the Department of Archaeology found two Buddha heads and a torso, most probably executed in situ, using local dolomite stone by sculptors trained in Nagarjunakonda. Like in Thiriyaya, the Kuchaveli complex was in all probability a Mahayana center during the 7th and 8th centuries, and as indicated by an inscription engraved on the boulder. The excavations conducted by the Department of Archaeology and the French Archaeological Mission at Kuchaveli in the summer 2011 have clearly shown that apart from being a monastic complex, the site was also an ancient seaport. The discovery of black and red ware, grey ware, rouletted ware, Chinese porcelain and Roman coins found in the test pits denote active trade activities. Fragment of three other Avalokiteshvara statues were found in two sites close to Kuchaveli. Two heads of princely types were found at Namalvatte. A torso of a Yogi Avalokiteshvara statue came to light from Nilaveli when constructing the infrastructure for the German voice radio station. These are just and also the beautiful Tara statue, now in the British Museum, was also found in Trichomelee. So these are just few examples showing the importance of Avalokiteshvara cult in the area around Trichomelee. The second cluster of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva images are found in the area connected with the ancient seaports of Kirinda and Godavaya. Tissamaharama, which is connected to the ancient seaport of Kirinda by the Kirindi Oya, was established as the capital of Singhalese kingdom of Ruhna as early as the 3rd century BCE. Excavations conducted by the Department of Archaeology with German archaeologists under Weiser at Akurgoda brought to light much needed evidence of the international, much needed evidence of the international trade in this region with India and other countries. In December 2001, in Tissamaharama, not far from Sandigiri Vihara, a Buddha statue and two small Bodhisattva images, most probably of Avalokiteshvara, were accidentally found in a private land known as Baduvatta. The Buddha statue resembles to the ones found in Kuchaveli and Mahiluppallama and has all the characteristics of the late Amaravati tradition. More than six statues of Avalokiteshvara are so far known from this area. Two statues are kept in the Yatala Museum and one is conserved inside the image house built on the terrace of Yatala Stupa. Two statues of Avalokiteshvara, one ascetic, the other princely, were found in the image house of Sitalpur, not far from the Kirinda seaport. These two types of Avalokiteshvara appears as a pair, as we have discussed earlier, at the site of Modu Mahavihara, Buddha Pattuna. At Girihandusaya, at Ambalantata, on the right bank of the Valave Ganga, two torso and one head of three different Avalokiteshvara statues were discovered. The presence of the Tathagata Amitabha depicted in the headdress is clear indication that the image represents Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion and spiritual emanation of Amitabha. Significantly, the Valave Ganga falls to the sea at Godavaya, an emporium and port described in the inscription on the boulder next to the ancient stupa. The epigraph states that the regular and minor duties in the seaport of Godapabbata were given to the Buddhist monastery by King Gamini Abhaya, normally dated from 114 to 136 CE. After this long detour, we come back to the shipwreck close to the Godavaya seaport. The study of the Godavaya shipwreck's cargo in a firm archaeological context will provide significant data on the close cultural, social, religious, and commercial interactions between Sri Lanka and Tamil Nadu in southern India during early historic period. According to surface explorations, the ship wrecked 3 miles from the estuary of the Valave Ganga was carrying stone jars, stone objects, grinding stones, and black and red ware, vessels, iron and copper bars, and very significantly, purified glass ingots. The metal samples were taken from the shipwreck were positively identified as copper and iron by Maurice Blais-Marcon by scanning electron microscopy energy dispersive X-ray analysis. The discovery of furnaces, which may have been used for forging iron, or for cementation at Ridiagama Bias, and wind-blown furnaces at Samanalavava in the upper river, Valave River Valley, excavated by Gil Joleff and the Sri Lankan archaeologists, are absolute proof for the existence of iron smelting technology as early as the beginning of the Common Era. Let us turn to the objects uncovered from the Godavaya ship wreckage. The first object uncovered and first piece of evidence regarding the chronology is a grinding stone. The finding of the upper and lower grinding stones during the last year's excavation enables us to consider them as grinding stones. The newly found stone has a zigzag stripe pattern similar to the one found buried under the Yatala Stupa terrace located in Tissamarama, the Asian capital of Rune. The first grinding stone recovered by our two fishermen is analogous to the one carrying an inscription also found buried under the Yatala Stupa. The inscription of the latter is in Prakrit, written in early Brahmi script, and can be paleographically dated to the second or the first century BCE. The stone found in the Godavaya shipwreck, though deprived of an inscription, has three auspicious symbols carved on the surface of the stone. Two fish symbols, Nandipada and the Srivasta. The stylized depictions of these three auspicious symbols appear on the chatras of ancient stupas, such as the one from Sarnath dating back to the first century BC. I mean, there are hundreds of them. The carvings on a stamba column at the northern Nayaka frontispiece of the Jethwanarama Dagaba, built by King Mahasena in the 3rd century of our era, two symbols, Srivasa and Nandipada, appear also in a Buddhist context. Fish symbol can be seen on Sangam age coin of the 3rd century or the 2nd century BCE. The earliest coins in Sri Lanka bear designs derived from the second series of Pandyan multi-type coins struck during the period circa 210-275 BCE. It is interesting to note that a similar type of coin was found in the structural period G, which dates to the 2nd century BC from Sri Lanka British excavations conducted by Shiran Dharaniagala and Robin Cunningham in the ancient citadel of Anuradhapura. This object thus provides strong evidence for the close cultural links between Sri Lanka and India and confirms further the hypothesis according to which the boats leaving India were sailing around the east coast of Sri Lanka so as to reach the dynamic port sites of the south. According to their typology, black and red ware shirts collected from the surface of the Godavaya shipwreck can be dated by the typology approximately to 2nd century BCE. At Ridhyagama and many other sites on the Valave Ganga, large quantities of early megalithic black and red ware, of which were engraved with early historic symbols, have been collected. A comparative study of these post-firing graffiti marks, usually found on the shoulder portion of the black and red ware, uncovered in the excavations at Kodumanal by K. Rajan in Tamil Nadu and at Ridhyagama and Kalinia by us in Sri Lanka, respectively show that these ceramic objects may have a common origin. The preliminary investigations on glass ingots from the Godavaya shipwreck carried out by James Lacton and Bernard Gratius opened the doors to the study of glass exchange in South and Southeast Asia. And these samples are exactly the type of archaeological material essential for a more complex understanding. Chemical compositional analyses of the two glass samples were performed using the laser ablation inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometry in the Institute of l'Institut de Recherche sur les Archéomatériaux, Saint-Ernest, Babylon, in Orléans. All the samples are soda glass, with soda as the primary flux and the low magnesium indicating a mineral source for the soda. Both samples have high aluminium, associated with glass produced in Asia. They are relatively high in lime and low in potash than the most Asian glasses. They contain moderate iron oxide, as might be expected from the use of rather impure sand as silica source. Chemical analysis confirms the presence of copper as coloring agent. Among the trace elements measured, the most striking is vanadium. Its contents is elevated in all the samples. Up to now, these high vanadium concentrations are characteristic for the glass found in South India at such Tamil sites as Alaganakulam, Arikamedu, Karur, Amaravati, Manikkole, although from none of these had the same very high ratios as the Godavai glass. On the other hand, the glass most likely produced at such contemporary Sri Lankan sites as Giribava is much lower in vanadium and vanadium ratios, making Sri Lanka an unlikely source for the Godavaya ingots. Using the trace element contents, it appears that Godavaya glass sample shirts may many chemical features with glass found or produced on Tamil Nadu coast of South India. The carbon 14 analysis carried out on three wood samples in the laboratories in India, France, and USA date the shipwreck between the 2nd century BCE and 1st century CE. The C14 analysis further confirmed the chronology obtained by the pottery typology and glass testing. Therefore, this Godavaya shipwreck should clearly be considered as the oldest so far attested in the Indian Ocean. The epigraphic and literary evidence for the active role played by the Tamil merchants in the early phase of Sri Lankan history is numerous. A study undertaken by I. Mahadevan has revealed the existence of a number of inscribed potsherds in Prakrit, Old Sinhalese language, written in Brahmi script, found at or near ancient seaports along the coast of India, and with that the coins found in Sri Lanka bearing Tamil names. It goes without saying that any research on the maritime trade in the Indian Ocean connected with South India and Sri Lanka has to be based on a scientific survey of the shipwreck at Godavaya. In the following seasons, we hope to map, excavate, and conserve the artifacts from Godavaya wreck using methods developed and refined by the Institute of Nautical Archaeology, University of Texas A&M, over the 5 decades. The provenance of all the artifacts and will be recorded by means of digital photogrammetry system. We hope to carry out a scientific analysis of wood to determine the origin. The further analysis of iron and copper bars, as well as the glass ingots, will enable us to determine the centers of production. All items already recovered and the ones to be airlifted from the wreck will be exhibited in the Maritime Archaeological Museum in Galle. So far, unlike Roman boats of which the architecture is known by the study of many shipwrecks, South Indian boats are only studied through iconography or ethnoarchaeology. Whereas Roman boats are strongly built by a system of pegs, the South Asian ones are likely to have been constructed with hewn planks, as the traditional boats still in use. Since the ship remained untouched, there is still a possibility of discovering some wooden structure beneath the cargo of 2 meters high. We might be able to reveal this technical aspect as well. With some optimism, we might even be able to determine the hull construction, I mean the function of clinker overlapping planks. These are the future aims of our collaborative program, and the results of these operations will be made available to the scientific community through our websites and finally by the final reports. Further scientific underwater excavations will help to understand the network of the trade and communication between the inland capitals of political centers and port towns in river estuaries open to long-distance exchange. In this way, the joint project might lead to a rewriting of economic, social, religious, and cultural history of the area. In conclusion, let me emphasize that Godavaya, like Kerinda, Gokarna, and Manthai, was clearly an important port site, so there is no wonder why so many depictions of Avalokiteshvara, the mariner guardian, have been found along the Vallavi Ganga. The preliminary investigations on the spatial distribution of Dhaulikateshwara statues in Sri Lanka as a whole show the importance of the role played by Dhaulikateshwara as the protector of mariners. Although the research on the subject is still in its initial stage, it is obvious that the cult worship of the Bodhisattva Dhaulikateshwara as the healer of the sick or protector of mariners was very popular in Sri Lanka. The Pali Chronicles, written by the Buddhist monks of the Mahavihara of the Theravada tradition, were primarily concerned with using the religious and political events to illustrate the importance of the Theravada Buddhism. Although the Mahayana, the Mahavamsa, does not make any reference to doctrinal or institutional manifestations of Mahayana, the archaeological and epigraphic evidence discussed today show very clearly that, like Hinduism, Jainism, Mahayana Buddhism played a significant role in the history of the island. Partly as a result of the dynamics of the maritime trade, by the 8th century, the so-called heterodox monks of the Abhigiri Vihara developed into a full-fledged Mahayana community when the Buddhists of Kanchi supported the secret and mystical beliefs of the esoteric and exoteric subsects of the Great Vehicle. From this period onwards, the Bodhisattva Dhaulikateshwara gained great popularity, as attested by a large number of his images erected all over the island. In ancient Sri Lanka, Buddhist art underwent drastic changes as the focus of trade changed from one horizon to the other. In many cases, even without precise textual evidence, artistic expressions show the effects of different cultures. In short, the emergence of new Mahayana iconography must be seriously considered when studying the historical diversity of different cultures. As I emphasized at the beginning of this talk, with the long distance trade, not only goods, but also ideas, cultures, religions, and iconographies travel from one place to the other, making the lands around the Indian Ocean one cultural entity in its diverse forms, ingeniously completing the aesthetic and sentiments of their respective populations. I thank you very much.
We have some 5 minutes for questions now, so we could take care. If you could introduce yourself first.
My name is Subhash Varma. I would like to ask, when you showed the third brass, the set of eight coins there, or four, eight coins probably, one had a swastika sign.
Yes. Yes. Those type of, according to my estimations, we have found so far about 200,000 Roman coins of the third brass, starting from Constantine the First, going up to Arcadius and Honorius, and also there are copies made probably in Sri Lanka. So since the Sri Lankan mint masters didn't understand Latin, the legend was transferred into asterisk and crosses and things like that. And since they didn't know the significance of the Christian cross, they converted the cross into swastika symbol. So, these coins were, of course, the legal tender of the country for two centuries, as we can see from the archaeological evidence. So this is completely a misunderstanding of Roman types. The two soldiers with one standard, and also the, emperor dragging the captive and all that. They were made according to their understanding, as the way they understood. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, I guess we can continue this over tea then in the next room. Yeah. Okay, thanks so much.